All right, well, we might kick off. So thank you, everyone, for joining us for this morning's session. And just firstly, I'd like to introduce Behrouz. So Dr. Behrouz Hassani has received his PhD from Monash in Econometrics and Computational Modelling. He's a senior data analyst at ISCA, leading the data management, linkage and analytics activities on TAC and WorkSafe data. He's contributed to multiple studies where Medicare hospital admission and emergency department information were linked to compensation data. Behrouz has published peer-reviewed papers and reports on topics such as compensation outcomes of elective surgeries, pain and depression after road traffic injury and cost of recovery. And so this morning, Behrouz is going to present on a topic that I'm certainly very interested to hear about, as I'm sure all of you are, which is the effects of pre-existing pain, mental health and chronic conditions on the cost of recovery from injury based on the evidence from the MBS, PBS and TAC data linkage. So if you could join me, please, in welcoming Behrouz.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. And thank you very much for the introduction, David. I may have moved around, so if you can't hear me, just let me know so I can go back to the microphone. The study that I'm going to talk about today, the lead investigator was Yannicka, and she's based at Monash Injury Research Institute. I was like the research fellow on the project, and also we had Eugene Hung from the Department of Economics, and Rod, who was at that time director of Monash Injury Research Institute, but now he's in the U.S. at CDC. When we think about data, scheme data, it looks very complicated because from the time that the accident happens, the injury happens, or something is reported, and sometimes even from the prevention time, we collect all this data about the person, about the providers, about costs, about the, you know, this type of service and type of employment, type of injury. So we're dealing with this very complex set of information, and we think we know everything. But when you think about it, you're like, okay, so I know all these things, but there are things that I don't know. So many schemes, for example, if the person is not claiming any income benefit, they don't collect information about employment, occupation, industry and those sort of things. Or we do not collect information about during the time of recovery, from the time that the person gets injured until when they leave the scheme or claim is closed, or we consider them to be recovered. We don't collect things on what has happened to their family, to their children, you know, and many other things. And when you think a bit further, you think that, okay, there's much more that we are not also collecting. If someone is having a traffic accident when they are 45, there is 45 years of information which may affect their recovery and their claim, and we don't know anything about. And if they recover in a year, there may be another 20 years of information that we don't know about, we don't know how, their life after what we call recovery has been affected. So basically, what we know is limited, and we don't know about pre-injury, we don't know about post-recovery, and we don't know about many other things during the recovery. So what I'm going to talk about today is mainly about the pre-injury side. I'm going to talk about how having a better understanding about pre-existing conditions in terms of mental health, pain, and chronic conditions can help us to predict the cost of recovery. And I will talk later that it's not really about cost, but it would help us to predict the recovery and the dynamics of recovery and trajectory of the recovery. So the approach that we have used is data linkage, you know, because schemes don't collect that much information, at least systematically, from everyone about their pre-existing conditions. So we have linked the data, and then I assume that you all know about data linkage, but a very simple example would be that imagine that your employer wants to give you a promotion based on how many times you have attended this conference. So what they do is that they send a list of all their employees to the conference organizers and say, okay, here are our personnel. Just, you know, in front of that, add a column and say how many times they have attended or presented at this conference. And the ISS would send the data back, and then they link it to, you know, what their HR information and, you know, make that as a basis for promotion. So that's the whole idea behind data linkage. So you share, you know, identifiers, some people give you further information, and, you get further insight and further value from the data that you currently own. At ISCAR, we have a few projects in that regard. We have projects and registries, like hospital registries, like probably you have heard about VOTR, the orthopedic registry, and VStorm, which is about trauma registry, that they, beyond the data that the schemes collect, they collect more data about what has happened in the hospital, the hospitalization which has happened, the acute setting, you know, like right after the injury. Some of them also collect outcomes, you know, like 3 months later, they contact the patient and say, so how are you going, you know, what has happened to you, and then at 6 months and 1 year. And then there are times that while a scheme is providing, you know, services, they collect these further detailed outcomes. And we have another project that I'm contributing to that for worker compensation. For 1 year of WorkSafe Victoria claims, we have linked those claims to Department of Health in Victoria. And they have got 8 years of any hospital admission and emergency department records for those 1 year of claims, and then 3 years post-injury. So we can look at any hospitalization for around, I think, 40,000 claimants and see what has happened to them in the 8 years prior to their injury, you know, if they've had any other complications that may have affected it, the accident itself or the injury itself or the recovery as a sign of comorbidity. So this project that I'm presenting on is part of a bigger project. That project is called Outcomes of Compensated Injury in Victoria, a Longitudinal Approach, which had like a TAC wing and a WorkSafe wing. The reports of that are out. You can ask them from ISCAR because that project concluded in end of June this year. And that project looked at pre-existing conditions, and also because it was linked to Medicare, it looked at what the schemes are not paying for. So it said, okay, if this person getting injured, in the first week, most of the painkillers and GP visits are actually going to Medicare, and provided a complete picture of what has happened to the person post-injury. What I am presenting today is just the pre-existing sort of side. So what I'm going to do is, like, I'm looking at around 800 TAC claims. Then for those claims, I have a year of services that these people have received, and it's almost any type of service from medical, hospital, income benefits, allied health and ambulance services. And then I would have a look at the Medicare services, post MBS, medical services, and PBS, which are medication, you know, pharmaceutical. And then I would try to see if I can use that pre-existing, like the Medicare information, to explain the recovery. So if you want to know about the people that we have recruited in this study, 10,000 TAC clients or claimants were contacted. That's when they had their injury. People with severe injury were excluded. So TAC contacts these people and says, are you interested for your record, for your claim information to be linked to Medicare information? The response rate was relatively a bit low, like it was 8%, because as you would expect, it's a sensitive linkage for many people to think that you have like a year worth of all the medical services that they've received from Medicare. And in terms of age, it was a bit biased because we received further response from older people, and while TAC has this huge, you know, base of, you know, younger drivers who have been involved in accidents. The researchers can see who has been contacted, so forms are sent directly from TAC. People fill them and send them back to the research team. So research team can see who hasn't responded, and TAC doesn't find out who has responded. So there's a bit of a privacy sort of sensitivity and control there as well. So, and at the end, like the consent forms from those clients is sent to the Department of Health in Canberra, and they go through this very, very throwback process, and then check every signature and then make sure that, you know, they are genuine, and then they provide you with the data. So the data from the Department of Health comes to the research team, and there is a key, like a shared identifier, that they can find one client, pre-existing condition, claim information, and recovery. So at the end, you're dealing with four sets of data. We have the claim information, we have MBS information for 12 months prior to the injury, we have PBS information for 12 months prior to the injury, and we have 12 months of post-injury services. This is a made-up example. So there is nothing real in there. I have to mention that. So what we see in MBS, we can see that Mr. A or Mrs. A has had a service 5 days before the accident, and it has costed this much, and that service has been imaging service, it has been actually an ultrasound, it has been a cardiac ultrasound, and we know the exact type of service based on the MBS codes, Medicare codes that some of you may have, you know, worked with. PBS, you know, let's say, for instance, if it is an oxycodone, it's like an opioid, we know it's an opioid, we know it's like what time, we go up and we know it's a nervous system drug, so we have all the categorization. What claim information tells us is like about the accident and their claimant. So 42-year-old, for example, lives in this area with that socioeconomic status, had a whiplash, he or she was a passenger, so it would be the injury and accident information. And we have, for a year, any service, and when I say service, it's like any payment that TAC has done. It can be a taxi service, it can be a physiotherapy, it can be a GP, a surgeon, a theater, or anything. So we have those information. So what we are doing here is that we don't have pre-existing condition information. We are using service use as a sign for pre-existing condition. So we are looking at the records and say, okay, this person, 12 months prior to the injury, they have taken antidepressants, so probably they have had depression. Some of those service use, you know, variables or items are good indicators. Like we have a blood test, which is for established diabetes. So we can say the person has had diabetes because he has taken this, you know, blood test. Some of them, like if it's a generic blood test or if it's an MRI, we can't really make that connection, you know. But then you would see, interestingly, the more sort of significant variables would appear further or more frequently in the results. So if you can think of this whole model, so far we look at cost of recovery and we look at how that has been affected by age, gender, type of injury, and other things. Now you're adding a new sort of dimension to that model, which is pre-existing conditions. Because we don't have pre-existing conditions, we actually are using indicators of health, which is actually their service use. So that's sort of the trade-off here. Now, so what is the outcome? What is why? My background is econometrics, so I'm more of YX sort of person. So what is why? One thing is it's total cost of recovery. You know, we just add up all the payments for a person over 12 months, and we say this is total cost of recovery. Then we're like, okay, why not categorize the income cost, hospital cost, medical cost, chemist cost? Then we're like, and that's one fault. Why not 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, you know, short term, medium term, long term? Then it's like, okay, so we can say cost of physio for people who have had physio, or cost of physio across everyone. So we include zeros as well. You know, they haven't used physio, but shall we include them as well? Then I'm like, that's really the econometric sort of thing kicking in. It's like, why not use the log value? Because cost, you would expect many outliers. I want to have a more linear model. And, you know, at this point, the other research team members say, you should stop. That's enough. But interestingly, at that point, I have developed 4,000 different outcomes. And it's like cost of physio over the first 3 months for people who have used physio, log value. The other one is cost of psychology services over the 12 months, you know. So I include everything, and I'm like, that should be fine. My colleagues have medical background, so they're not happy at this point. So I'm like, okay, let's make it worse. Now, right-hand side, X. So I can say drugs, it's nervous system, you know, different, like, 6, 7 main types. And then with medical services, I can, based on MBS, they have imaging services. Pathology, therapeutic, and consultations, you know, visits, you know, GP and psychiatrists. Then I'm like, okay, let's say, for instance, separate GPs from psychiatrists. And GPs, you can have short visits, long visits. So I do the same thing, and this time I end up, the number is there, with 300 different right-hand side variables, which in many cases I don't have enough data because there's just one person who have used that MRI across 800 people. So I have to remove some of them. I have to remove some of them which have in technical term, multicollinearity, you know, there are correlation. I can't put two things which are, let's say, if anyone who has used the nervous system drug has used painkiller, so those two are exactly similar, so I can't put them at the same time in the model. I do a bit of correction there, but at the end, I have too many outcomes, I have too many factors, and any conventional technique would fail. So here is when I use sort of directed data mining approach, which I mainly apply Bayesian model averaging, because anyone If anyone is interested, I'm more than happy to tell you. But what Bayesian model averaging basically does is, like, you gave me 100 variables. It starts putting them back and forth into the model, and it controls for something, let's say, fire square or, you know, a measure to say how good that model is. And through that process, tries to find the best model which would have the highest, you know, explanatory power. So that's the technique. But you have to run the model for millions of times, and I have 4,000 outcomes, and I can run it on my computer. Monash has a service, which I use during my PhD, called Monash High Performance Computing Service, which they give you 8 computers to run this at the same time, like 64 cores. So you can run thousands of models over like a week. So we end up running millions and millions of models to see what is really affecting what. So how I should interpret the results? So when I'm taking you through the results, you're thinking of it this way. So if two people, it's like a simple regression model. If two people call TAC, same age, same gender, living in the same socioeconomic area, they have had the same type of accident, sustained the same type of injury, they have had the same role in the accident. So if all the patient or claimant or client and accident factors are similar, one of them has had diabetes, the other one didn't, how the cost is going to be different, you know? So we are controlling for everything. But then remember that when I say diabetes, it's like people who have had that blood test for established diabetes, not diabetes itself, because we haven't asked people if you have had diabetes or we don't have any indicator that is service use. So if you want to leave now, this is like a general, these are the results. With chronic conditions, and I will talk about them, we couldn't see that much impact on the total cost. So if you have two people, one of them has had diabetes or cardiovascular, the total cost of recovery wasn't that much different, but the categorical cost was different. I will explain that. But pain and mental health had significant impact across cost sort of variables. I will give you some information. I intentionally didn't put all the results here because 4,000 outcomes, but I put like the main ones with the, you know, major implications that I think would be interesting and you can think about them. But again, there is a report with some further detailed information that you can get from ISCAR. One was diabetes, and so when we talk about chronic conditions, and that's how much the total cost has changed. Hospital cost, for instance, in this group has changed. When you think about the chronic conditions, we found 3-4 main things. When that question about aging was raised yesterday, I was going to raise my hand and say I have some information, but then I thought I wouldn't have enough time to go through the whole thing. What I learned here through this process, and I'll show you the next slide, which is medical costs, is that many of the services which are used by more and more frequently by older people, if they have had it in the year prior to the accident, they're more likely to have a higher cost of recovery. You know, like cardiovascular, blood tests, which are again related to aging, and drugs, which are for sensory organs, which are usually, you know, are things that, you know, are highly correlated with age. And remember that we have control for age here. So age usually isn't a significant factor, but conditions which are age-related are significant, which is, I think, the interesting result. So when we talk about aging, I will talk about it later. That's something to keep in mind. With mental health, this is sort of the variables we use. We looked if someone has gone to GP for mental health treatment, like the GP mental health plan. We looked if they have visited a psychiatrist, if they've had any visit, if they have taken opioids, if they have taken any analgesics. Those things, I don't want to pronounce them, but they are all anxiety-related, those four. I think I have a mouse here I can use. So these ones are different types of stress and anxiety-related, and some of you may know, and this is depression, antidepressants. And then after that, we looked at depression or anxiety, any sign, any drug related to that, depression and pain, anxiety and pain. The line there is any medication, then the one is any mental health, and at the end, any pain or mental health. So, and interestingly, from those 800 people that we had, and remember there was an age bias overall, there were 30% that in the year prior to the accident, they had at least one prescription related to pain or mental health, which I think is a significant sort of number just by itself. It's very interesting. And we have something, there's a paper that if you're interested, and we have shown that 50% of people who have taken antidepressants in the year after their traffic accident injury have been taking antidepressants in the year before. You know, so some of these people have, you know, this is how the depression and injury interact. So I'll take you through some of the, like very quickly through some of the tables that we have. So pain, I start with pain and then I go to mental health. Pain has a significant result on the total cost. People who have been taking opioids on overall any painkillers in the year prior to injury had around 30 to 40% higher recovery cost in the year after their injury. People who, with hospital costs, most of the numbers are in short term, you know, 30 to 40% for painkillers, but with and with medical costs, it comes to long term. And interestingly, people who have had pain and depression in the year, or services related or medications related to that, in the year prior to their injury, they had 60% higher cost of 60% higher medical costs in the year after their injury, which was very significant. And you can see, I will show you later, pain and depression individually is around 30%, but the combined is around 60%. And income, which is something that I know WorkSafe is also interested in, and I should mention that the same study, like this, is happening for WorkSafe. I think the results of that would be ready by the end of this year. And it's, again, on cost and pre-existing conditions, the same approach for around, again, 800 WorkSafe clients. I think this was one of the biggest effects that I basically observed in this study, which is with painkillers, people who have been on painkillers in the year before, the short term, and I intentionally moved it from 1 month to 3 months with income benefit, because 1 month, you know, usually isn't enough. But their 1 year cost of income benefits, or, you know, being afford, was 70 to 80% higher post accident. With mental health, with the total cost, the main thing that we observed with all of those different variables, I'll just give you a summary that it was mainly about, so both anxiety and depression were significant. As you can see, anxiety was around 60%, depression was around 30%. But again, combined depression and pain was 60%. And you can see when, if one thing you can observe is that we have relatively large confidence intervals, and it's because, you know, we've had 800 people and just 20% of them have had that condition. But you can see when you look at the total effect of pain and depression, pain and mental health, the confidence intervals get better, and you have, you know, again, 30, 40% higher cost. With hospital costs, that was the same thing. Interestingly, as we had for pain, most of the cost happens in short term, because it's the immediate hospitalization after the accident. And as we were discussing it in another presentation with David yesterday, there is not that much of a, what I would call, secondary hospitalization with TAC, probably. You know, like, there is, but it's not huge enough to show you the impact in long term. So you can see most of it in short term. And what is interesting is that you can see people with anxiety have higher hospital costs after the accident, you know. So how a mental health condition is sort of interacting with their injury and their service use. Again, with medical costs, this, again, you can see long term, the pattern is much more significant. And they have 50%, 40%, you know, with depression, and overall we at least have 20% when you look at any pain or mental health of higher medical costs. Now, the final one, the final table is on income costs, how people with mental health may have higher income costs. We didn't see that much effect. There was just one, which was anxiety, and we saw like a significance, like 100% higher costs with people with anxiety. And that's something that I'm exploring a bit further with that specific type of drug, but I thought it would be interesting to just share the results with you. Some of you may have, you know, about, you know, about something about that specific type of medication. But that's something that I've recently extracted from the data. So if I want to summarize, I would say that the effect of pre-existing conditions is there. It starts very early. We have seen people with diabetes have higher ambulance costs. So it starts from ambulance right after the injury. It goes to the hospital cost in short term, medical costs, and income cost in long term. And after two, it's now like in December, it would be 2 years that I started this project. And after 2 years, I think I've moved again from that liability perspective to a public health perspective. And this is my personal, because I come from a different background. My PhD was on climate change, so not that much related. But after dealing with scheme data and it's the context for 2 years, this is my main conclusion, that it's not about cost, and we are not mainly paying for pre-existing conditions, but we are paying for how they interact with recovery. You know, so we are not paying for a person with diabetes, we are paying for the fact that a person with diabetes is going to recover slower and it's going to be more costly. We are not paying for depression, we are paying for how people who have already had depression would have a lengthier, more costly, you know, even in things like victimization, you know, or, you know, in those areas they may perform worse. So, and that's, to me, that's one of the main things that I've learned through this project. And it has really changed for me from the first time that I got some results. I was like, oh, okay, so this is, you're paying for pre-existing, but that's not the case, you know, when you look at type of cost that you can see here. So when you think about translation, I think some of it's about prevention. You know, in Victoria, we've had the World Health Program. This shows, and World Health was more about physical health, but I think the big message here is that physical health is important, but let's include mental health if you're going to have another round of World Health, if you're going to have work initiative and work workplace health initiatives. Let's look at the mental health while you're looking at physical health. The other thing is it's about information. You know, we have to collect more data, and we're not collecting it to deny service. We're connecting it to support people better. And one thing that we suggested out of this study to TAC was, and we're going to do it with WorkSafe, is that let's come up with 5 questions which would capture most of the pre-existing conditions, like, do you have diabetes? Have you visited a psychiatrist in the last year? And let's say, have you had a surgery in the last 12 months? You know, like 5 main questions that we think we capture 80% of what is going to happen and how it's going to affect the post-injury recovery. And then how TAC is going to use it, hopefully, is like saying, okay, if I have this person with the pre-existing mental health condition, let's assign this person to these specialized case managers who know how to deal with such a person. Again, with my economics background, it's more of a resource allocation efficiency perspective rather than, you know, cost-benefit sort of perspective. And finally, what I mentioned about the sustainability of the scheme and aging, I think, I was going to mention, as I said yesterday, but now I mention it here, that I think with aging, you're looking at the wrong variable. We have a model, we add age, and we say nothing happened. I think it should go a bit further and look at what an age population is, you know, what are the characteristics. Does it mean that there would be more, you know, people with, let's say, cardiovascular conditions, and if that is having an effect? Because this study shows you can have healthy age population that they wouldn't have any extra cost. So, yes, and Iskar, contacting, and my long email address, which Monash made sure they put every part of my name and surname. I used to be bizeco@monash.edu.au, so it was like even longer than that, but yes, but I'm more than happy to answer your questions and comments. Thank you.
All right.
Well, we've got a short one today.
Sure.
Sam Fuller from Employers Mutual. Thank you. The Atria me is quite fascinated, but my claims brain, which is rapidly developing, is sitting here going, and how do we use that? And I know you've talked through a couple of questions that might be asked. I have 2 questions. One is, did you actually link individual claims records, so the actual individual with, you know, their outcome all the way through?
Yeah. So it's like those 800 people, their information goes to the Department of Health. So for every person, you get 2 data sets from Medicare. One is MBS, one is PBS. And for the same shared ID, you have claim information and you have a year of services. So it's like a disaggregated individual level data.
And if we wanted, I mean, the data that you've got, you could take it beyond a year if you wanted. So you could
Take
someone's whole journey.
Yeah, so with the WorkSafe, I think now they're extending it to 18 months, you know, sort of service use, and you can extend it because I think through the ethics application, we are allowed to, you know, update the data, and I think can use the data for 5 to 7 years. And one thing they're doing, the other Yannicka is actually doing, is looking at secondary complications, especially with mental health, because here it's all everything in first year, but she's specifically looking at people who are developing, you know, mental health conditions in long term. So, with the questions, one thing, when Yannicka was presenting part of this, like the major project at WorkSafe recently, and there was a very interesting discussion about how we can ask GPs to also report on pre-existing conditions, you know, so beyond the way that we are adding a few questions to the claim form, let's say, there may be other channels that, you know, because GPs may write, a paragraph and say, this person has also diabetes, but no one is going to look at that because they can't itemize it into data and use it for prediction and use it for case management. But maybe, you know, it can be an item which, especially in cases like WorkSafe, that the claim starts with a certificate, you know, that can be very helpful.
In terms of the questions, I guess the thought in my mind is the moment you ask somebody who has depression and anxiety, do they have it, the relationship with the case manager tends to become quite a lot more strained.
Yes.
And I also have questions about whether that's right privacy-wise to, you know, connect the data sets together and to understand that. How, in a practical basis, do we actually try and deal with that? So I absolutely agree there's some really important components and pre-existing conditions. We absolutely understand. I think everything you've put there probably rings true with everybody in this room.
Yep.
But how do we, in a practical perspective, actually use that given the issues that are at hand?
Oh, fair enough. I think that discussion has been raised when I presented this second time at TAC, that, you know, sometimes when you ask people, do you have mental health, people who say yes are actually honest people who they are going to have, like, a better claim journey overall. You know, so it has been tested and people have asked that question. One thing that we suggested was, like, it may be better sometimes to ask. So, for instance, if you ask instead of people, do you have any chronic conditions, we may have to, because we now have a service use perspective, to say, have you used this service, you know, which may be not as sensitive as saying, you know, do you have depression, you know? So, like, a question like, have you visited a psychiatrist in the last year may not be as sensitive. But that's an ongoing discussion, you know, and that's would be part of the translation of this both for TAC and WorkSafe. I don't know if you have any ideas, because I know you have some experiences.
Yeah, I think I think that it's a sort of a topic we are wrestling with, and as part of which are sort of separate presentation, but you know we've been gathering a lot of data around anxiety and depression ourselves. But I think the way that, and I think it's one thing to do it in a research context, but to do it in a claims management context is quite different. But I think there is indications that I think you know, the good case managers can really weave into a conversation, and if they can do it in a sort of a still a semi-structured way, you can capture the information. But it's sort of just part of a claims management conversation rather than something that's quite sort of diagnostic and intrusive, if that makes sense. So it is possible, but I wouldn't say it's easy.
Yeah. So at EML, we've been running a pilot along those lines, and the challenge, so because it was a pilot, they've knocked in and they've knocked out. We find the ones that opt out actually do tend to, you know, have a very different journey to those that opt in. But we've been allowing them that choice at this point in time to understand how confronting the questions are and the reasons why people wouldn't want to be asked those questions.
One thing we have done, which may be interesting to you, we have done it at ISCA, is that with some of the surveys, we have actually, there was like a survey with WorkSafe that we had a look. It was an injured worker survey. Sometimes you can look at a question. So how people have responded to that question, link it back to the claims data and say, okay, people, let's say, who have said, I don't know to that question are actually people who are on average older, you know. So we have used that sort of technique to say if the questions that we are asking in a survey can be optimized and can be, you know, we can make sure that it's not the question which is, you know, encouraging a specific answer. And I think in some cases, you know, these are things that you really don't know, like, because no one else has tried. So you can pilot them. You can, you know, add that question to 1,000. That's my research mind. You know, you can add that question to 1,000, you know, claim forms or ask 1,000 people call. And then in a year time, see if you can see any difference in how you are, you know, managing the case. Oh, someone is at the microphone. Sorry.
Daniel Keating. I have a question around composition. Was that just for the TAC claims, or did that also cover WorkSafe claims?
What I presented was just TAC, because there are two separate studies. So 10,000, as far as I remember, TAC clients and 10,000 WorkSafe clients have been contacted. But there are two studies because of the MBS is consistent, you know, the data. But when it comes to payments and outcomes, TAC and WorkSafe use different coding cases. So there is one larger study, which is pre-existing, non-compensable for TAC. There is this smaller study on cost. Then there is another larger study on WorkSafe, which is pre-existing, non-compensable, and there is a smaller study on WorkSafe, just on cost. So the equivalent of this for 800 WorkSafe, but what I presented here is just the ACP clients.
So, having gone through the process of kind of collecting and matching that data, do you have kind of any thoughts on whether it'd be feasible for that process to take place on a kind of ongoing basis, you know, as part of the regular running of a scheme?
Don't think so. And it's mainly, I think you, but I'm going, by ongoing, if you're like, you can, for every person who is joining in, you can get the Medicare information. Is that what you're suggesting? Or, the linkage?
Or for an ongoing kind of a subset of claims?
There may be some, you know, I know that in Victoria, we have a what we call VDL, Victorian Data Linkage Unit, and they're trying to establish that link, you know. But I think the main thing is the consent that you have to, you may obtain it, and then, you know, you do that linkage. Yeah, sure. If you want to answer.
Can I answer that question as well? So I've got a view. One is the Department of Health federally makes it very difficult to link data. There's pretty strict protocols to get access to this information. I'd have to sign a physical consent form, which is why you get such a low response rate. But one of the things we've been working on in Victoria with WorkSafe so far, not perhaps with PSC moving forward, is actually linking a much larger group of claims to hospital data sets. So we've got...
I talked about that, yeah. So 40,000. So what we have with hospital, because hospital linkage in Victoria doesn't need consent, Department of Health, if you go through all the ethics process, you know, like they provide it to you for research purposes. And with hospital, I think hospitalization is a better indicator of morbidity. You know, so if you see someone is hospitalized, you think something has happened, and you have the ICD code, which is, you know, to me is better than MBS codes. But VDL is trying to make that linkage to MBS as well. And their time frame is like in the next 3 to 5 years. But that should be possible at a point. Not in a sense that a claim comes in and you would just, you know, press a button and you get the MBS or Medicare information, but in a sense that, you know, like something in a longitudinal study with TAC, you know, you can collect some information from, like through the ethics process and the whole consent process. Yes, but this whole linkage thing, like in Victoria now you can link to, and that's what we are doing with WorkSafe already. That's a project that we started 2 months ago. We are linking to drug and alcohol abuse, you know, to get records of drug and alcohol abuse. There is a better database on mental health, which is a specific hospitalization on mental health. We have started the process for obtaining that data set as well. Death index, that's another thing. So if you want to look at long-term outcomes, you know, you can get death index. Some community, like domestic violence, even in those cases, if you can show that there's a case, you can link your data. Yes.
But the objective of that, we're doing it as a research institute.
Yes.
The long-term objective of that for me is actually to demonstrate the value of it to the government, not just to the regulator, the workers' comp regulator. And then hopefully at some point in the probably distant future when I'm retired,
Then I am retired.
It will be, this thing will happen more routinely.
Yes.
Not at an individual case level because of privacy issues there, but in terms of formulating strategy for scheme management and those sort of things on a routine basis, you'd think you'd want to make good use of the existing data sets in the state.
I don't know if anyone is here from ACC, but in New Zealand they... Oh, okay. I've heard in New Zealand they have done it. So in ACHRF, I was talking to someone from New Zealand that they have like a room that, I don't know, like you go through 10 different doors and you do put on those passcodes and you get this room that you sit in front of a computer and you have access to a database which has hospital, sort of Medicare, injury, compensation, everything linked, and that's like an analyst heaven. So, they have done it in New Zealand. So if you want to do it, it's possible, you know. It's not like impossible, but yeah.
All right. Well, unfortunately, unless there's any one final quick ones, we're probably out of time, but I guess if everyone can just join me again, I think that was a fascinating...
Oh, thank you.